WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tomorrow night at NYU's Skirball Center, there will be a debate on the proposition that the United States should ban college football. It's part of the Intelligence Squared or IQ2 debate series, and it comes as college sports in general and college football in particular are coming under increased scrutiny over issues ranging from exploitation of the athletes who can't make money on their fame to low graduation rates and ruinous head injuries. We have two of the debaters with us right now for a preview, and I think this will be a fascinating conversation. Sports journalist Buzz Bissinger, best known for his book Friday Night Lights about a high school football team. He wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal recently arguing for the abolition of college football. And Tim Green, former pro football player who's gone on to be an author of many books. His latest is the ninth in the series for young readers, and it's called Pinch Hit. And he has written about sports and other things, as well as being a TV host and NPR commentator. He will argue against banning college football tomorrow night and here as well. So, Buzz and Tim, we really appreciate both of you doing this debate pregame show with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
And let me ask you both, if we're going to consider abolishing college football, why does college football exist in the first place? Tim, why does it? Why do college and football exist under the same roof in the first place?
Obviously, it didn't start out the way that what it's become. It started out as another sport, that colleges offered for their students. It's evolved into really a pre-professional league in both football and basketball. So, in a way, it's become something that I don't think was the original intent. But at the same time, I just don't think you're going to get rid of it. People love it now. Fans love it. Alumni love it. Even a lot of the faculty and certainly the student body. And I think it's great for the players themselves.
Buzz, college football has its problems. I listed some of them. But would banning it be too extreme a solution?
Well, I mean, radical times call for radical changes. And this is a radical time in our society, particularly economically, as the challenges that we face from the global economy are more intense than ever, from India, from China, from North Korea. Our level of educational attainment in colleges ranks 14th, which is very, very low. And yes, it's radical, but it has gotten out of control. And this is a problem that has gone on for at least 80 years with virtually no change. In 1929, the Carnegie Foundation commissioned a report that cited many of the same things that are occurring today. Illegal recruiting, too much emphasis on football, over-education, and that too many universities were becoming athletic institutions instead of educational institutions. In 1939, the University of Chicago actually did drop football. They were in the Big Ten. Jay Berwanger had won the Heisman Trophy in 1933. Robert Hutchins said, "This program has no place on a college campus. It only leads to problems." Even then, money was a problem because of gate receipts. He got rid of it. Everyone said, "You're crazy. You're crazy. You're nuts. Alumni will rise up. This will rise up." Well, when I last checked, which was yesterday, University of Chicago was ranked the fifth best national university in the country by U.S. News and the eighth best in the world. So they didn't suffer, so it can happen. And I think, yes, it's radical, but it should happen now. Students more than ever need to learn.
All right, listeners, we're previewing this particular IQ squared debate because this is such a radical concept in its way, and we think it's really going to strike a nerve out there one way or the other. This year seems to be a time when more pressure is coming to bear than ever before on football in general because of the increasing evidence in medical science about the head injuries and so forth, and Joe Nocera in the Times raising all these questions about college sports in general and the exploitation of the athletes. This is just much more possible to talk about, to even debate the idea of a ban on college football than ever before. They're doing it, and we're doing it with Buzz Bissinger and Tim Green. 212-433-WNYC if you want to get in on this. 212-433-9692. Students, faculty members, alumni. This is a lot about alumni, folks. If you don't think it is. Alumni not wanting to lose their beloved football teams. 212-433-9692. So, Tim, to one of Buzz's points, some schools make money on football and use it to subsidize education and research. Many schools lose money. Why should colleges losing money on football subsidize it, forcing academic cutbacks or tuition increases?
Well, I don't know how many lose money on football. I know that
43% lose money in the BCS.
Right. So I think that you may not.
Sorry,
make
BCS.
Money direct.
But what does BCS mean in this?
The BCS is the, I guess Tim will know. It's the basically teams that are eligible to play in what is the current playoff system for a national championship. It's basically the major college football program.
And you're saying 43% of them lose money on football?
Yes, so roughly 43% of them lost money on football, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Tim, do you argue with the stat?
Well, if 43% were losing money or losing a lot of it, or it wasn't a good economic engine for them, they wouldn't be doing it. So I don't accept that at all. I don't think you're going to find there are tremendous revenue, monetary benefits to the university, whether they're direct or indirect. Otherwise, look, this is America. Universities are businesses as well as educational institutions because they have to make money to pay their professors and their staff and the grounds and maintenance and all that. So it's just a faulty premise.
How
it isn't, it isn't a faulty premise because a lot of programs wrongly think that by maintaining big-time football programs, it's going to attract donations. There have been many studies proving that if it does attract donations, it's minimal. In order to do that, they have to have very successful football programs, which means spending more money. And you say universities are a business. They're not a business. They are tax-exempt institutions, so fine.
Well,
if you want to tax them,
then show me a faculty that's doing it without compensation. And as you know, the more compensation you pay, you know, faculty, it's almost like a sports team in and of itself because the better faculty members go to the money where the better endowments are, the better chairs, the more money. I mean, that's what
athletic departments are not run as businesses. And you talk about faculty, the percent of faculty salaries has gone up roughly, I think it's roughly 30 times since 1986 or 1980.
Right.
For college presidents, it's gone up roughly, I think it's maybe 50 times. For college coaches, it's gone up 500 times. Now, explain that to me.
Now, you know what, I want to move on.
I don't really have to because I'm not arguing that they should, The fact is that universities run these programs. Most of them, make a tremendous amount of money that not only pay for the scholarships for those players, but also end up with excess money that goes to other programs or, you know, I guess in theory research, and certainly to support the athletic program where you have women's scholarships under the Title IX program.
How many major colleges, Buzz?
It's just
Tim,
America.
I can only give you statistics. What am I supposed to do?
Guess what? It's time for me to jump in, and we have to take a break. And actually, we're going to move this away from money. After the break, we're going to talk about how medical issues come into this debate over whether we should ban college football. Our first caller is going to be an orthopedic surgeon. So we continue with Buzz Bissinger and Tim Green on the question, should college football be banned? Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're asking, should we ban college football? This is kind of a preview of a debate tomorrow night at NYU Skirball Center, part of the Intelligence Squared debate series. I should mention, this is so hot already between the debaters and so many people calling in, that the actual debate tomorrow night is sold out. So don't go to try to buy tickets. But we will air a one-hour version of this debate on WNYC in conjunction with Intelligence Squared on Memorial Day weekend. Stay tuned for times. And you can go to our site at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show if you want to comment. You can also get a link to the Intelligence Squared debate series for some of their future stuff. Or if you want to vote, I think people can vote in advance on this, whether it should be banned.
Is there a live feed? Streaming it.
Uh-huh.
So if you go to the IQ2 website, you can watch the live stream.
Oh, great. I didn't know about the live stream. So you can get there, too, from our page. Listeners, if you want to find out more about that, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. We have an Intelligence Squared debate series link. And our guests engaging in this debate tomorrow night are sports journalist Buzz Bissinger, best known for his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Friday Night Lights, about a high school football team, and Tim Green, former pro football player who's gone on to be an author many times over, including his latest book, Pinch Hit. And Buzz and Tim are on different sides of this. Malcolm Gladwell, by the way, is also on the Buzz Bissinger pro ban side. And Tim, who's your co-debater? Is it Jason Whitlock from Fox Sports?
Jason Whitlock is on my side.
All right. So let's get some of our callers in here. Sean in Bergen County. You're on WNYC. Hi, Sean.
Hi. How are you?
All right. And you?
So, you know, I wanted to just comment. I'm an orthopedic surgeon in Bergen County, and I cover at times high school football games out here. And last season, there was not one game where a kid did from either the home team or the visiting team didn't come out of the game with a concussion. There, every single game, there was at least one kid with a concussion or some type of concussive-type symptoms. And we have a mechanism in place to protect the elbows of eight-year-olds. They can't throw a certain number of pitches. But we don't count the number of hits that these high school and college athletes take. And I personally think that it's the liability associated with football is what's going to end college football, because more and more literature is coming out supporting the fact that these multiple hits and these little hits over years and years and years are going to lead to a significant detrimental effect on these kids' brains. And I don't think the colleges are going to be able to accept the liability anymore.
Sean, would you recommend, as an orthopedic surgeon, banning college football?
You know, I have a son. He's one, and I will not let him play one down of football. I'm not the smallest guy in the world, and I would assume that he's going to be the same size. He's not going to play one down of football because I think that his brain is just much more important than playing a couple downs and having a fun time. He can play any other sport he wants, but he won't suit up. Banning the sport, I like football. I watch it. I really enjoy college football, but people enjoyed watching Gladiators many years ago, and that doesn't occur anymore either. I mean,
right.
At some point we're going to have to say, I don't care about the money. I don't care that Auburn and Michigan and Ohio State make all this money from these games. We have to end it.
Sean, thank you very much. So, Tim Green, what about the increasing – forget about the liability question for a minute. That's his prediction.
I would presume that Sean is also going to prohibit his child from ever getting in a vehicle – riding a bike or when he turns 18, having a drink of alcohol, because there's so many things that are so much more dangerous in our society than playing football that it's just ludicrous to say, well, I'm not going to do it. I mean, if you're going to take all those other precautions, then okay. If you're going to put yourself in a bubble and live your life like that, then that's fine. I mean, I would never say you have kids have to play football. But if they want to and you don't let them, well, you also are going to have to prevent them from playing lacrosse, from playing baseball, from playing hockey, from doing gymnastics, from downhill skiing. So, you know, that's your prerogative. But just don't expect that people are going to take you seriously when you say you're not going to let your kid play football, but you're going to let them participate in all these other more equally or more dangerous event, participation.
Buzz, want to get in on this?
I'm not sure. With the exception of hockey, you know, I don't know if Mr. Green is right. He tends to dismiss statistics as just saying he doesn't believe them.
Why would you say I dismiss statistics?
Because
what
when I say 43% of major college schools lose money, you say you don't accept that. So how can I argue against it? How many athletic programs do you think actually make money? Major college.
Let's get back to it.
Let's move on.
A majority
here.
Make
no,
money.
I'd like
no,
you guys
they
to.
They do not. A majority do not make money.
A majority
money.
Is 57%.
Uh-oh.
Minority is 43%.
I'm talking about
those
athletic
numbers,
programs overall.
Here we go again.
Overall.
Do me a favor, guys. Don't get back into that one. And
I know, but if I use statistics and he doesn't accept them, what am I supposed to do?
All right. So, Buzz, go. How much do,
but let me go with it.
How much does injury have to do?
Let me just say this. The first ever study that measures head impacts among youth football players, it found that they suffered hits that were equivalent to what pro players suffered. They said in some cases they topped 80 Gs, which is similar to what college players experience, even though the youth players have less body mass and play at slower speeds. So it obviously has become a very dangerous sport, and unlike Mr. Green is suggesting, there has been a lot of new and recent research to suggest it. So it isn't like, you know, we knew this 30 years ago. There has been a ton of new research in the past 5 years. And as Chris Nowinski says, the co-founder of the Sports Legacy Institute, he says, I am shocked to see that these children receive levels of brain trauma comparable to college football players. And I think there is a difference between playing college football and getting in a car and driving. And, yes, taking a drink of alcohol is wonderful as long as you don't do it driving. There is a now enormous risk associated with playing football. Now, Tim is right. It's a free country. If you want to play it, that's fine. And if you're going to play it, you got to play it to the hilt. I don't believe in all these shaving of the rules because then it won't be football.
Buzz, I'm curious. On those grounds, would you also propose banning pro football?
No, because I think pro football players at least get something out of it. Right now, college football players get nothing out of it, even though universities make millions upon millions off their backs.
That's just not true.
What's not true?
That college football players get nothing out of it.
They get a scholarship, although they are. You know as well as I do that you are the exception. That for most of these kids, they're not going to these major college football programs to study. They're going to play football, and they will tell you that they don't have time to study because it is increasingly becoming a more demanding and year-round commitment.
Tim, go ahead.
College football players' graduation rates are on the rise.
Yeah, well, why do you think that?
Now, here's where I'll agree with Buzz. I do think that college football players should be paid. I think they should benefit more than they do.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that they get nothing is just not true. I mean, if your kid is going to Syracuse University, for example, my alma mater, and they're going to go there for 5 years, I mean, that's over $250,000 in tuition and all the other fees that go with it. So it's not nothing, many football players. I'm really not the exception. I mean, most football players do graduate. I have a son who's going to play at UCF next year on a full scholarship, and he's going to go down there and play for, you know, hopefully 5 years. And it's a tremendous benefit to him.
Let me take one more call before
it's
we...
It's not true. I mean, just to argue that, well, it's not enough, I would actually agree with you. I think players absolutely should get some kind of stipend. But then, you know, I do understand where the NCAA has that's a slippery slope.
So there's the common ground on paying college football players. One more caller. Helen in Montclair. You're on WNYC. Hi, Helen.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, real quick.
I just wanted to make a point about the difference between D1 and D3 college athletic programs. My son.
That's Division I, the most competitive schools, versus Division III, where athletics aren't as important and they're not as considered not as good.
Right, and they, I mean, they're playing at a very high level, but the balance between academics and athletics is much more even.
So, in other words, your son is at a D3, and you think
that's
it's okay.
Not true.
Well, wait, Helen, your experience is your son is playing.
My son is playing lacrosse, not football, at a Division III school, and they actually just won their conference championship yesterday. And the emphasis from the coach straight along through is make sure that they have the support and the time to do their academics first. An athletic second, and it makes for a very well-rounded education.
Right.
My point is that the athletics with academics can be a very strong combination.
Thank you for your call, guys. 30 seconds for closing arguments. Tim first.
I have a son who's a Division III football player. He spent absolutely as much time, you know, with his football and his weightlifting, as did I as a D1 player, as my other son Will as a D1 player. Football programs are tough at D3, they're tough at D1, but everywhere you see players also have enough time if they discipline themselves, and there's a huge emphasis with the colleges now on the study halls and the tutors, and they are getting their work done. It is possible to do both, and in fact, most players do both.
Buzz, 30 seconds.
Well, I mean, I think graduation rates are up because the NCAA wanted them to be up. I think you have the Auburn syndrome, where you have the sociology professor who had independent studies for roughly 200 students, many of them football players, in which they got A's without doing any work. And if Tim doesn't believe me, he can read Pete Sammel's series. It's not an isolated incident. And
yes,
plus, why are student athletes getting $41 million academic centers while the average student is not getting any of that? Why is athletic spending for the major colleges, why has it gone up 42% while academic spending per student has gone up 23% in a day of increased tuition costs and a more competitive society than ever? These
we'll
are
have
academic
to leave
institutions.
This as a rhetorical question at the end of this debate. Well, I don't think it's going to be boring tomorrow night at NYU, a school without a football team, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, right? And we will say again that this debate tomorrow night is sold out at the Skirball Center, but you can watch the live stream on the Intelligence Squared U.S. Website. You can get to that through our page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show, and we will air this debate as a radio program on Memorial Day weekend. We'll tell you when we know exactly when that's going to be. We thank Buzz Bissinger and Tim Green, who are going to be among the debaters tomorrow night on the question, should college football be banned? Thank you very, very much for this very lively preview.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks, Buzz. See you tomorrow night.
All right, Tim. See you.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. See their pals as they walk off. Fine. Buzz, Tim. Yep. See you. Coming up next, China's one-child policy. Is it a human rights violation in and of itself?